and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 643.
That's right. Oh, just the reverse of 34. I don't know. I'm making connections that barely work.
Maybe because you completely lost me.
You said 43, right?
Yes. Oh, I got you. The dyslexic version of the issue number that we're covering.
That's right.
That's right. Now it makes more sense.
All right. All that preamble to say we are talking about Green Lantern number 34 tonight. We got a few things to get into, so we're just going to dive into it. Don't want to spend too much time on the recap of this one because half of it is relatively straightforward. That half, before I even get into that, I should probably give us our creative teams. Our creative team is writer Jeremy Adams, artist Iguara, as well as Montos. We have colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr., letterer Dave Sharp, assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Kathleen Wyneski, group editor Paul Kaminsky, and I guess cover artist is Zermanico, as is typical on these. We open up with Kyle facing down one of the Cyan Cell prisoners named Gridlock. It is being reported on by the local news and a helicopter. And Gridlock is talking about how he's a big deal and that he once melted the core of a planet and it took 10 lanterns to take him down and so on and so forth. But Kyle ends up taking him out with a construct hammer.
It's a golf club, I think.
Well, and then a hammer.
Yes, but yes, yeah. The initial blow was the golf club. But yeah, we can talk about the whole logic and all, that whole opening sequence too. But
yeah, we cut over then to same day, later that day, next day, who knows? Ventura Boulevard, Studio City, where Kyle and Odyssey are having a conversation about how they need a job for just money and to get by. And Odyssey just says, like, well, we can just be a thief and whatever. Anyway, she gets noticed for her big break by some sort of studio exec or director or whatever, asking her if she'd like to be a star. I will cut to the Hal stuff after we finish the Kyle stuff. They end up having a meeting with this guy. He attempts to hire her. He gives her a check. She says add a zero. He does so, and they agree to come back in the next morning. That's it for the Kyle stuff. That's really all we got. As for the Hal stuff, Hal is with one half of the Wonder Twins on just a random outpost planet. And suddenly Hal gets taken away. No energy. He just starts being yanked from the ground through the sky. Jaina transforms into a pterodactyl to follow after him. He crashes through a window and is confronted by the guardians, who tell him that he should not have come and that whatever you think you are, is wrong. Your meddling is going to end the universe as we know it. So he basically tells you, there are two types of kids, ones that listen to authority and the other ones, the ones that hear an order as a challenge. Guess which one I am? And Jaina crashes through and the window and carries him off. The guardians give chase. They try to make it back to their ship, but their ship is exploded by the guardians. The guardians are about to take a final blow. to take care of Jaina and Hal when suddenly a grenade of some kind falls to the floor in front of the Guardians and energy rushes out, decapacitating them, at least temporarily. Hal and Jaina make a run for it. They're called into a side door, which closes shut just in time as the Guardians fly past on the search for Jaina and Hal. And they say thanks for the save. And his name is Toby Y2K, the last son of Earth, and he's here to rescue them. And that's this issue.
Is he related to the... I know you said this is a brand new character, but do we think he's somehow tied into the reign of the Superboys? Because why the hell is there an X-Shield in the next issue? And it does say the last son of Earth, which makes you think of the last son of Krypton or something. I don't know. And the colors could be construed as somewhat Superman or Superboy-esque. Either way, another great thud of an ending by Jeremy. So let's start. Well, it's kind of hard to. I was going to say let's start with the good, and that's kind of hard to find. Not that this issue is the absolute worst thing we've ever read, but again, at this point, when we're treading water, the way this book is, it's kind of even the small little victories are hard to find. You are correct about the only, again, this is going to be a backhanded compliment. The only redeeming thing about the art in this entire book is, you are correct, are the Guardians. The Guardians still look weird, but they do look somewhat Guardian-like, and they do look threatening, especially when you have Rage Lantern Guardian bitch slap Hal. Completely, obviously, out of character, but I guess because he's a Red Lantern, Tony Stark, I'm going to allow that. but Hal looks absolutely atrocious. Mm-hmm. And Kyle doesn't look much better. And as a nitpick, seeing Kyle with a round ring just doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right to me. But that's the least of the issues with the art in this book. But there's a lot of problems with the art in this book. Dealing with plot points. Did they ever really give us an explanation for why Hal has no power? Why his ring is out of power? Because he's still wearing his uniform.
I'm not sure.
Because why wouldn't have? Because if it just ran out because it ran out. Because I don't think the Manhunters drained him. Because if they didn't drain him, then why the hell are we supposed to think he wasn't bright enough to either take his battery with him or to recharge before he left Earth to go on this mission? Well, that just kind of hit me today when I was reading this. It seems
or the teleport somehow drained it.
Maybe that's about the only thing I could think of, because I was pretty sure we never got a real scene. They gave us a logical explanation for why he's powerless. The opening sequence is really it's really dumb. You literally have this guy talking about how he killed like, what, 8 lanterns and how difficult he is. And Kyle just basically whacks him twice with 2 constructs. And all of a sudden now he takes him in. That makes no goddamn sense on any level whatsoever. But it does continue our science cell of the month club, as we kind of suspected was going to happen, even though it's a very small part of the issue. That's probably just it.
Why even come up with a reason if it's just going to be background noise?
Well, because I guess that's technically speaking the only reason he's quote unquote allowed on Earth. So I guess you have to show that he's at least partially doing his job. Though the whole idea of, oh, I'm so happy to be back and to get my life. It's like, it doesn't make any sense anyway, because you know you're living on borrowed time. Well, so, okay, maybe you get your life back, but then as soon as you capture all these guys, they're going to take you off world again in all likelihood. So what's the point? The Hal stuff was the only interesting stuff in this book, because do we really need somebody just liking Odyssey's look and all of a sudden making her a movie star? And again, Kyle, he's like a witness to his own destiny again, because now he's just I'm her bodyguard. It's like, yeah. So so that storyline is unfortunately going exactly like we thought, where it's not particularly interesting. We get nothing of Krona. Nothing of Krona. This last page reveal means nothing, I think, to anyone. And the only thing, I guess, if you want to look at from a plot perspective, I guess that vision we saw of Hal being attacked by the Guardians, this obviously refers to this moment and or another moment coming down the road. So we know now that it's going to be it wasn't a false vision, or it wasn't Hal like being possessed, or it wasn't the Krona version of Hal that the vision that we saw that Hal with Hal being attacked by the Guardians was probably this moment. But I don't know. I just don't get this. I really don't. I don't get it. This is this. And because the art is so atrocious in this book that it what again, talk about following. If you wanted to build on any kind of momentum, and we'll talk about momentum because we actually do have the sales from last month that we're going to talk about. that if you wanted to build on momentum from issue 600, that having the story be so weak in this issue and then having the art be so weak, it just seems like it's a quick way to hemorrhage, even if you had a chance of holding on to a decent amount of that or half of the uptick you might have gotten. It seems like you're going to hemorrhage it real quick with this book.
Yeah. No, I agree. The other thing that bothers me is this is the second time, and I talked about this a bit online, on one of our Twitter. It bothers me because I did mention it last time when we talked about 600. That moment where Kyle's in the car talking to Jessica over the ring, and she's like, "Hey, remember why I sent you?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." It's basically like, "Okay, Mom, I'll do my homework," kind of a thing. It happens again here. He's right. I don't know why he was in the science sales. I got real sleepy after reading the power set section. It would be easier if the files were illustrated. Less boring. They're continuing the whole flippant Kyle Rayner thing. Maybe possibly even irresponsible or lax or lazy or whatever. I'm not down for that. We had how many issues of Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern, with starting with the Daryl Banks and Ron Marz stuff and going on and until forever. We had a whole ass run showing the growth of this character. We don't need to backpedal into the whole I'm young and irresponsible thing.
And honestly, it's even more insulting when you look at what they do with Joe. That Joe's supposed to be a walking encyclopedia whenever she needs to have information about shit that she would have no reason to know. And there's no logical reason why she would be spending time to learn, even if she had the opportunity to find it somewhere. But yet she always can rattle off this information about all this stuff. And yet Kyle, who's been around forever and should have more working knowledge than most people considering. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's like, you know, I could have paid more attention, but. Yeah, like logically, he wouldn't pay attention to the people that he was being sent, the primer on the villains, the escapees that he was being sent to capture. Like, yeah, there's no point paying attention, especially the fact that he killed eight out of the 10 Lanterns that went to go apprehend him. You would think that kind of would be top of the file if you were sending anybody after him. Oh, by the way, don't take this guy for granted because.
Yeah. The other thing that seems out of nowhere is the Guardians right now, their reaction. Last time we saw them, they were benevolent. They were talking to the Lanterns in terms of like, you know, they would chime in when information was needed and they would have, you know, questions would be asked of them and so on and so forth. So them going back to kind of the Guardians we know, at least classically speaking, in terms of, you know, this isn't knowledge for you, do what we tell you, slapping him away to be quiet, you know, so obviously that's a little, you know, obviously the Guardians never really lashed out like that. But just in terms of the way they were speaking, that it's just a random leap from the last time we saw them. I'm sure there's probably some in-story explanation for all of it or whatever, but it does come across a little jarring. Compared to the last time we saw them, I guess technically the last time we saw them where they were getting zapped with some sort of information or knowledge themselves, which may have, they said something about, did they restore the entirety of their memories or just some of them? And that's what sent them chasing after Krona.
I don't think it was all of them. I think they got some of them back and then they were just kind and they were, I don't 100% remember if they got all of them back. They got, obviously they have more memories of, have been restored than they had before. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm hoping we'll get an in-story explanation, because let's be honest, going down the road of having the Guardians turn bad again, especially when the friggin' Guardians have only been back for barely over 10 issues to do it again. I mean, it's just, it makes no sense whatsoever. I kind of suspect they're not going to be doing that. I think there's going to be more of an in-house explanation for why that they may literally be trying to protect exactly what they said. They may be trying to protect Hal from himself because who knows? I was thinking about this with the idea that, you know, Barry's whole theory that Hal sent the message to himself, what if it was like, What if it's like a Kroneb, Hal, sending these messages to Hal to have him do what he wants because of the fact that it is the same friggin' DNA. So I don't know. I think we'll get some explanation. I'm certainly hoping we will. But the Hal stuff is the Hal and the Guardian stuff is the only interesting thing in this. This Kyle stuff with Odyssey is going to suck the life out of this book so fast because who the F cares? Why should we care about Odyssey to begin with? I mean, she's literally a character that he created to throw into this book. She has really no value. There's no reason to care about her. We've never been given a reason to care about her. And now we're going to get another character thrown in at the end that means absolutely nothing to us. And meanwhile, we see Krona once every four issues. So this is continuing a pattern on one level of these stories dragging on, these story arcs dragging on ridiculously long because he doesn't deal with any of these. He doesn't give us the answers. Now, he seemed to be doing better at that, at least with the Starbreaker Supremacy, that we didn't have to wait as long. And that arc wasn't from beginning to end, wasn't super, super long compared to that Darlin garbage. But he's kind of treading water again because now we know we're going to have Kyle probably in this book for at least. And again, this isn't anti-Kyle. It's just it's actually more problematic for Kyle and his fans to give Kyle a book, quote unquote, feature him front and center and give bad stories because when we get to the sales in a few minutes, we can just imagine in another month or so Comic Book Revolution doing their usual once the sale numbers come in for 34 and 35 that, you know, putting Kyle Rayner front and center is doing this book no favors. And again, based on sales, they're probably going to be right. But that's not do I think that's the reason why the book is going to be sinking? No, it's not going to be because it's Kyle. It's going to be because of the stories that are being told.
Yeah. Well, speaking to Odyssey and Toby Y2K here, I don't want to go down the route personally. You do what you want, however you feel, obviously. But like, I personally don't want to allow myself to go down that route of getting mad at Jeremy for creating a character. I think that's the right of every creator who's ever been on a book to add their stamp to not just the title they're writing, but the DC universe as a whole. If everybody before them had a chance to add something to the pot, it only makes sense to me that Jeremy and everybody else should be allowed to do that too. That's okay with me. That said, you have to do something with the characters that you insert into the universe. Odyssey was created because he wanted to use Cassie, but wasn't allowed to by DC. And then she just entered the scene. It would have made more sense to have Cassie there in terms of like the tie into the Titans, potential relationship between her and Connor and so on and so forth. Like that it would have been great. But you just created this character to fill that role. So you inserted her into that role and just essentially wrote her like you would have written Cassie, right? Because if that's who you wanted to be in that role and that's who you had planned for, why wouldn't some of the mannerisms and interactions and dialogue match the character you originally intended? So she was just for a while, she was just a stand in for Cassie. And then you started to realize, okay, I can do a little bit more with her, but by you're clearly doing something with her now. Great. But is it too little too late? Because now you're relying on her to be a focal point of the book, but you haven't put in the work to develop her to earn that spot, to reliably go, I will bank the upcoming potential sales of this title in putting Odyssey at the forefront, so much so that she's almost on every color cover and every variant cover moving forward. Let's feature her that hard without knowing anything about her.
Yeah, I agree.
It may be a draw to be like, okay, some people may be like, I like her design or I like her pluck or whatever. I would like, I'm generally curious about Odyssey, but enough for you to put her on the covers? to make her a focal point of this book. Maybe he's going to do something with Toby Y2K. You mentioned, I didn't even clock it, the shield in the upcoming solicit there at the bottom corner, the red and blue costume design. Maybe he's related. Like, at least maybe this with Toby, he'll do something interesting. But you can't have me be interested in Toby Y2K when the last person you inserted in this book you didn't bother to develop until now.
Yeah, like you said, the issue is not the fact that he's creating new characters, because almost everybody creates new characters. It's what you do with them. And she's done that. But the point, going kind of like echoing what you said, along with what I kind of was alluding to, she's done nothing in this book to warrant being front and center. And the point is, she's not a Green Lantern. She has no ties to the Green Lantern Corps whatsoever. And she's being put front and center on a book that Hal Jordan was the main character. Now he's been pushed off as a secondary character. You put Kyle in charge is the main selling point on paper. And yet he's kind of like taking a back seat to this brand new character there's probably like 50, if you're lucky, 15% of the readers even give a crap about. And then when the book, pretty much almost take it to the bank, inevitably starts tanking sales wise, then it's going to be like, we didn't see that one coming. And it's like, this is the problem. You like to think Jeremy is an end game to why this character is in this book and why it's being front and center right now. But you can't necessarily say that because we've been, not that it was his character, but we still don't know what happened to Shepard. Mm-hmm. We didn't even get a friggin' one disposable line about how he went back to his own timeline, his own reality. But it doesn't matter because we have so many Green Lanterns that could be featured and the story is being focused in on. And you're going to be focusing in on Kyle Plant being a second banana to this Odyssey character.
And why does Kyle trust her?
Yeah, in all honesty, when I first was reading the book and this guy reacted to her walking by him, I thought she like pickpocketed him or something. That's what I thought. Because that's around the time they're talking about being thieves. So I thought literally she just bumped, like walked by this guy and ripped him off, and he just realized it and was coming after her. I don't understand. I don't understand. I think this storyline without some dramatic change is going to torpedo this book and the sales very, very quickly. And this is one thing this book and this brand does not need, because it ain't, if it's even a brand anymore, it ain't much of one, because nothing is selling other than Absolute. Nothing is selling. So this book, the Joker line from the Michael Keaton Batman, this book needs an enema. It needs something. This book needs something. It needs like we joked around before, an intervention. Green Lantern needs a DC intervention to do something, because we like Jeremy, and there's some good things that he does in these books, but
he characterizes Hal very well.
Yes,
he has done. He's put in a ton of work to try and make people buy into the Hal and Carol relationship.
Yes.
So like he clearly knows his lore for the most part. There's lots to be said positively about Jeremy, but as we will get into with the sales, we have to worry about this stuff because it dirties the brand. Basically, I think there will always be a Green Lantern book, which historically is not true, because there was a time it was reduced to backups, or it was in the Flash, or it was reduced to being showing up in one of the five stories in issues of Action Comics Weekly. So like, it has happened historically before, but I think we're in an era now where, at least for the next 10, 20 years or so, there will always be a Green Lantern book. But how much other chances the franchise gets depends on the hot popularity that the main book can maintain.
Yeah, agreed.
So speaking of sales, yes. Unless we had anything else.
No, that's a perfect segue. So let's build this up. Let's build this up to the, from the preliminaries to the main event, because since we've been the first preliminary, since we don't care about it at all, is Absolute Green Lantern number 12, which was the last issue that we covered last week. That dropped to number 30. So it's still selling well, But you have to say, now that we've had, I think, the last three issues, I think, have been like 25, 25, and 30, when this book was clearly a top 20 book for a long time. Might have been a top, and I think it was a top 10 book when it first rolled out. This book is definitely weakening. It's still, I mean, the other books would kill to be weakening like this and still be like number 30. But you have to say that the Absolute Green Lantern is showing signs of weakening, and I believe it's still the worst selling of the Absolute books. I believe, I don't have the Absolute chart in front of me, but I think when I looked at it, that not counting, you know, resolicitations, I think that was the lowest selling non-resolicit Absolute title. So we have that one. Green Lantern Corps number 14. Green Lantern Corps number 14 fell from number 138 all the way down to 158. So I'm going to read this just because, again, this is they Comic Book Revolution just loves to have commentary, which is funny because when we get to the sales for Green Lantern 33, they conveniently leave out any. They're very glass half full on that, which I find interesting. But they say this title continues to be a complete sales dud as Morgan Hampton continues to find sales success an impossibility. They do love writing Morgan Hampton into the ground here, which, again, I can't argue with them because I don't know anything about Morgan Hampton's sales history. So I'm going to assume what they're saying is correct, that for DC that he's never been a seller. But that being said, do I think Morgan Hampton is the reason why Green Lantern Corps isn't selling? No, I don't, because I still think, especially after reading this issue we just talked about, Green Lantern Corps by far is the best book. It's the most interesting book, even with the flaws in it and all. It's much more interesting on a monthly basis because at least stuff happened. So that brings us to the main event. Green Lantern 33/600 shot all the way up from 136 to number 68. Actually, yeah, I thought for some reason when I said to you, I guess kept thinking 66 in my head, but it's 68. So I moved all the way up from 136 to 68. And all they said about it was, that is a huge rebound and exactly the kind of movement DC Comics desperately needed from this franchise. Except they conveniently leave out the only reason why it jumped up was because it was issue 600. I mean, does anybody think this book would have shot all the way up from, jumped up with like 60 plus spots? Because, oh, it was the story in the book. It was because it was pushed as issue 600. And despite all that, it still barely made the top 75. So they're being ridiculously glass half full with that, which I find curious because they are so negative when it comes to certain things. But I don't think that number is good at all. We talked about it like two weeks ago, that if this book didn't at least make the top, was at least not 50, that would be horrible about telling you all you needed to know about how weak this brand is right now. So with all the hype, still only moved up to 68. So as far as I'm concerned, and if you don't want to go down the road, we joked, well, I was only semi-kidding, about making bets what the sales for the book we just talked about, what that's going to end up being, the range, that I would absolutely say it's a foregone conclusion that Green Lantern 34 is going to be out of the top 100, considering it took all that movement. So even if you cut in half the increase that it made, that the odds are that would mathematically probably take it out of the top 100 to begin with. So I would bet serious money this book will be outside the top 100. Issue Green Lantern 34.
I think 35 will be. I think 34 has a chance to be still in like the 90s or something.
So you want that to be over and under? That you're going to take that it's that?
I mean, that, I'm not putting any money on it, but yeah, sure.
So you'll take that it'll be in the, that it'll be below, it'll be in
above the 100, but I, no, I below see it in the
90s. Well, technically, it won't be any lower than 99. That's what I will take the over
because I am not saying that because of the content of what we just read. I am assuming a bump based on interest in seeing where the new arc goes. Sales or, you know, people who, you know, put their orders in with their LCS or whatever because a new arc is starting or whatever, and they order before they read the digital or hear reviews or whatever. Like they just buy the book and without knowing anything about what's inside it, and because they're curious about where the next arc is going, and then it disappoints them, which would be, you know, by the time 35 comes around, reflected with the numbers for 35. I think habit buying and interest in new arc and, you know, potential Kyle Rayner bump, who the hell knows, keeps it in the 90s at the very least, but I, you know, no lower than the 90s. But I think 35 falls to, like, I don't know, if it keeps up like this, like 127 or some crap like that.
Yeah, remember my magic number was 150, that I think it's going to drop into the 150s before this Kyle arc ends. That being said, even if you're right, I'm trying to be glass half full here. It jumped up. It literally jumped up 68 spots. Well, actually, it jumped up. Correction. It jumped up. Yeah, I think it did jump up 68. If my math is correct, I think it jumped up 68 spots to 268. That means that even if it holds on to half of the bump that it got, that means it still would be 34 spots lower than where it is now, which would take it out of the top 100. So that's why that's why I'm betting on numbers here. That I don't think it's going to have more than it's going to hold more than 50% of the people that just bought this issue, since we know a lot of those people just bought it either for speculation or for the covers or just because, hey, it's Green Lantern 600. And I don't think there was a whole lot in the issue. Now you could be correct that there was enough in setting the table in issue 600. If you really want to be generous to say maybe it'll hold more than 50% of that bump for 1 month, but I'm still willing to bet you it's going to drop out of the top 100, considering it barely made the top 75, even with all the hype behind it. But we'll see. Yeah. But either way, yeah, there's almost no way, based on what's going on in this book, that this thing is going to not, like you said, if it somehow manages to survive and into the 90s for issue 34, by the time you get to issue 35, this thing's going to be this thing is almost guaranteed to be exactly where it was before Green Lantern 600 came out, because there's no reason to hold anybody. This is not interesting. I mean, you have to be a diehard Kyle fan just to want to buy the book and just hang on to it, because the story itself is not going to convince people to, because it's not even a Kyle. It's barely even a Kyle story. It's a 50-50 story with Kyle on his, in his own section.
Yeah. And we should bring it up, because when you sent me the numbers, we were talking about the Green Lantern core number being at, you said, yes, 158, right?
Yep.
And I said, you know, that's, yeah, well, I might as well quote myself. You know, that's something we're not talking about on the show. With Germany, we're at least fairly confident there will still be a Green Lantern series, as I alluded to earlier. But with Morgan Hampton, the lesson DC is going to learn if that book fails is a Green Lantern core book isn't sustainable, instead of, whoops, wrong creative team.
Yeah. And I think the other problem here, and this is why I don't blame Morgan Hampton for what's going on here, because even though even if we assume Morgan Hampton is 100% writing his own scripts at this stage, it doesn't mean that the overall, first of all, Jeremy is, if there's a showrunner, quote unquote, of the Green Lantern franchise right now, it's Jeremy. So he's the one who put all these pieces on the board and set some of these wheels in motion and these stories. So Morgan may have creative license to how he wants to tell the story, but it's also very possible that Jeremy is still steering the ship as far as where these stories have to end up at some point, based on what he wants to do in the overall Green Lantern brand. So it's very, like we talked about before, it's similar but not the same to how Van Jensen was kind of under Venditti, though, of course, there's the asterisk, because he wouldn't have had the job without Venditti, and if Fialkov hadn't got canned. But it was right at the end of Van Jensen his run, which was unfortunate, that he finally got to do his own stories, and they were not tied into what's going on in the main book, and then it got canceled. I think that was the Rebirth reboot, but the DC Rebirth reboot. But the reality is, yeah, this is hurting everything, because it just makes it very difficult for DC to say Green Lantern can support two books, even though the issue might be the direction that this book is kind of being forced to follow.
Yeah, agreed. All right, what's next?
All right, so let's roll through a few things first. Housekeeping, few things we talked about in the last couple episodes, just following up on. The Alien Director's Cut is on HBO Max. I think I found it, like, again, like the next day under the new column. So I'm pretty sure I saw it originally, so I'm not sure if it disappeared. There was a glitch or their search feature was just horrible. But all the extended versions, I think, that exist of the Alien movies are on HBO Max. I did win my hockey league. We never did go back to that. I did hold on, barely, but I did hold on and win that last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It makes me sucking in the rotisserie baseball league so much more acceptable. But hockey was, yeah, I really needed to, that was very important to me.
I don't know how you do it, man. It's irritating enough trying to participate in one fantasy football league. I don't know how you just follow and baseball and do fantasy baseball and do fantasy hockey. I'd lose my mind.
Yeah, it's the focal point is that's why it's a little easier in a way. It's easier now because I've won so many times in that old baseball league that I retired, you know, the league that we had for 24 years that I retired, that I won 16 times, like in 24 years. Mm-hmm. And I ended the league on a four year winning streak. And yeah, I could have tried for five, which I had done twice before, but the stress just, it's stupid to some people, but it's like, but you know, the thing I equate it to is, I think it's what Joe Gibbs, how he described it when he was getting the last year he was with the Redskins before he actually retired the first time, that the amount of work it takes to basically maintain what you're doing. And it's not even that you're enjoying the winning or it's not even the pressure to win. It's the pressure not to lose. That it's not that. Yeah. If you win, you get a sense of relief, but the stress you go through to get there after a while becomes, so it's not that enjoyable. Ultimately, it's better than losing, but in baseball it makes it worse because baseball is the longest season. So right now, the fact that I'm sucking in the league, even though this league has only been, this is a new league, so technically there's no history to it. So I don't feel the pressure. This is only the second year of this rotisserie scoring league that replaced the old league. Right now, I'm horrible. I'm like friggin' last place out of six teams, 30 something points out of first place. But I don't feel any pressure at all because it's number, not just because it's April, but because I don't, it doesn't mean the same to me. But nonetheless, so yes, I agree. It gets tough. If you're doing everything and you're competing and you're as competitive as I am, you have to pick your spot. I'm still up to date currently on Maul Shadow Lord. That is fantastic. I'm really enjoying that. Speaking of which I mentioned already to Chad, that sometime last weekend, almost like covertly, Disney Plus finally added in Spider-Man No Way Home, which everybody kind of knew was coming because it's too self-serving for both Sony and Marvel, Disney, not to put that movie on before Brand New Day came out. But it is on. So if you didn't notice it, yes, Spider-Man No Way Home is on Disney Plus, and it's still as good. It was nice watching it again. And the only thing what has Mark seen? I saw Faces of Death last week, which wasn't my call. It was okay. It's one of those movies that kind of like takes liberties in the sense that the actual Faces of Death movie and movies exist in this world. And somebody's trying to basically do copycatting, really killing people by taking the audio clips of the original movie and doing real murders, reenacting the fake stuff in those movies, reenacting them and really killing people, but using the same dialogue as a layover. And one woman in particular, one girl, figures it out and hijinks.
So Scream-esque?
Kind of how the Stab movies exist in Scream, which are, you know, the fictionalized versions of what we see in Scream movies always become Stab movies inside the Scream universe. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like that. It was interesting because what's his face? Oh, God, I can never pronounce his name anyway. The guy who played Billy in Stranger Things, the heartthrob. He also was, I think, the...
Haven't seen Stranger Things.
The White Ranger in that 2016 or 2018 Power Ranger remake. Yeah. I could find his name later on. But yeah, he is the antagonist. Let's put it that way. And he does antagonists well. So I think that's pretty good. And I think that's all I have before we segue, I think, into the commonality of the one probably major topic we're gonna delve into. To wrap up.
Yeah, we got a couple trailers to talk about. Two that dropped today as we speak.
Go for it, Chet.
Which one do you want to start with?
That's why I'm saying go for it. It's your call.
We'll probably have the most to say about the Coyote versus Acme. So Clayface. Clayface's trailer dropped. At the same time or like an hour after the poster dropped? They posted the trailer. It's it's a very body horror type of movie. I don't know what to say about it in terms of plot or anything like that, but just it does not look like a comic book movie. And one of the things that people like about certain superhero movies is that they're not necessarily a superhero movie. A lot of people point to Captain America Winter Soldier. That one, it's like a spy movie that just so happens to have superheroes. This looks like it could just be a horror movie that just so happens to have, you know, a, well, not a hero, but I guess a villain origin story in it. It's possible it could be good. It just looks like it would scratch the itch of that audience well enough to get a draw from them and not just the DC nerds.
Yeah. The trailer is very well made. It's very creepy. It's one of those things where I don't know. Again, it's kind of hard to know. Apparently, he played the Red Ranger. It said maybe. Oh, Dacre Montgomery is the actor I was thinking of. I don't know how he technically pronounces how you pronounce his first name. No, maybe it is Dacre. Maybe it's Dacre Montgomery. Yeah, you don't know how it's gonna play because it very much could. It doesn't look like a traditional comic book movie, so it could alienate some of the comic book audience. But as you pointed out accurately, it could appeal to the body horror fan that it maybe wouldn't give a crap about a comic book movie, but because it looks like it's just going to be a really creepy, disturbing movie, it might draw people in. It still is a very odd choice from a live action theatrical movie, especially when up to this point we're only going to have Superman and Supergirl. And I know Supergirl's not going to be the same tone as Superman, obviously. But still, this seems that it's still going to be a completely different tone than the Clayface movie. It seems like a very, very odd choice. And again, depending how Supergirl does, this could be a real risky roll of the dice if Supergirl dramatically underperforms, especially compared to Superman. And having to rely on Clayface as the next movie to come out to see to try to get you back on track. I don't know. Something about this almost seems like it would have been better off almost to be an HBO Max exclusive. Not even necessarily a show, but it could have been a movie. I don't know. You give Gunn and Company credit for taking risks. But again, it's an obscure character. It's like a C-tier character to begin with. But again, we know. And again, this could be his Marvel experience, that you can take C-tier characters, you can make them work if you approach it the right way. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's confident that they have the formula. They have the formula to do that, like they did here with Guardians and Iron Man wasn't a C-tier character, but he was a B-tier comic book character. So maybe they feel like they can do that. Ant-Man was probably a C-tier character. Mm-hmm. So it looks good, but does it make me really want to go see it? I might, but it doesn't. But it doesn't really. The natural subject matter doesn't draw me in. Let's put it that way.
Maybe part of the whole shtick, the plan is to play with genre. You know, it's not just about making a good comic book movie. It's just about making a good movie. And they went, let's do a horror movie. Okay, cool. Let's just go all in. Who can we do that with? And the same thing with Lanterns. Let's make a detective thing, or let's do like a true detective type show. Who could we insert into that type of story? What would be interesting? Maybe they're leading with genre before they even pick the character for at least some of these projects. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
No.
But it would be, it's not something that is necessarily tried and true. So maybe it'll work. Let's see how Clayface does. Let's see how Lanterns does.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about how things are going to play out. So the reality is we really don't know. Yeah.
All right. So a movie that was supposed to be coming out in like 2023, or at least was shelved in 2023, and gave Warner, what, like a $30 million tax write-off, is now going to be coming to theaters August 28th. It is Coyote versus Acme, and the trailer for that dropped today from, was it Ketchup Productions
yes,
or whatever?
I believe.
Ketchup Entertainment, yeah. Yeah. I guess they, so we don't even have to get into this debate, but I also started thinking, like, well, if the movie's still coming out, does somebody owe a portion of the tax write-off back? Like, you know, how does that work? Anyways, but it actually, it looks kind of good, man.
Yeah, it looks entertaining. That as many people have pointed out, it actually is quite brilliant to use the fact that Warner Brothers never wanted this movie to see the light of day and kind of fit that into the marketing campaign, saying the movie Acme never wanted you to see or doesn't want you to see and all this stuff. That it's kind of clever to put that into the marketing campaign for the movie. With the premise, I mean, we don't know what that. That's Will Forte, right?
I think
it's Will Forte. That obviously he's a lawyer that has an in for Acme, but the concept is anyway related to Wile E. Coyote is that he's suing Acme for all his failures trying to get Roadrunner because it wasn't really his fault. He was just Acme just makes crap and all the damages and all the injuries he's had over the years is just because Acme makes defective machinery and that he's suing Acme for compensation. So it's, yeah, I did remember that John Cena was in the movie. I completely forgot that Lana Condor was in the movie. And I like Lana Condor, so I think that's a plus for me that she's in the movie. But yeah, I think it's going to be fun. It's funny. It was funny because I saw John Campia talking about this earlier, and God, he was railing against this movie, saying, "Oh my God, it doesn't look funny at all." It's like this movie's going to be, no one's going to go see this movie. And most people, if you read the comments, most people have, I think they're more echoing our sentiments that at least it looks cute, it looks funny, it would be worth seeing. And it would be something good to go see to begin with, as long as you have any interest in it. This is a kind of movie people should rally behind because of the fact that the studio wanted to shelve it for so badly. I think it was like $70 million they wanted. I think it was $70 million or something that they wanted to be able to sell the movie to someone else to distribute. It's like, if you want this movie, give us $70 million and you can have it to distribute. But yeah, I think this movie, it looks interesting in this Roger Rabbit like way of mixing live action with the animation. It looks cool. No, doesn't appear Marvin the Martian's in it, which I guess I think he could be in it. I thought he might have used some Acme stuff too. I thought some of his blasters might have been Acme, like disintegrator guns or whatever. But either way, I think it looks fun. I'm certainly. We'll plan on going to see it, and yeah, I think it's,
as long as it's better than Looney Tunes Back in Action, I'll call it a win, because I'm a Space Jam kid. I love Space Jam and technically a Who Framed Roger Rabbit kid, because loved that movie too. Watched that a whole lot. So I much in the way we talked kind of a while back about the Muppets, like how the Muppets are sort of disappearing and people are forgetting about them. Looney Tunes are also kind of in that boat, and I want the Looney Tunes to succeed. I like the Looney Tunes. So I'm excited for it. I'll tell you this. I knew it was coming out. Obviously we talked about it in our movie episode at the beginning of the year, but I am now more interested and more excited to see it, which is the sign of a successful trailer.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, the two major points or reasons for trailers is to draw people in, to first of all, is to let people know this project is coming if they're not aware of it, or to remind people if they were aware of it but forgot about it, and to put something in the trailer that makes you more excited about the project than you were before. So like with some people, like we talked about with the email last week about how the lantern seemingly had the opposite effect on a bunch of people. That it did not make you more excited to see the project than you were going in. Once what you saw did not go, okay, that kind of raised my interest level. This, you know, seeing the footage and seeing the context of it, and yeah, plus, and I do think it has a chance. it has a chance for broad. I think it has a chance for broader appeal than, let's say, like what The Day the Earth Blew Up, when that one came out a couple of years ago, which I still have never completely watched on HBO Max. Because even though I like Porky Pig and I like Daffy Duck, I kind of like them more together as Duck Dodgers and the Space Cadet. But this one, this one obviously is branching out and has a lot of other Looney Tune characters in it. We don't know if there's more than we've seen, but obviously you saw Daffy, you saw Tweety, you saw Foghorn Leghorn, you see deep throat there, the secret source being Bugs Bunny in the shadows. So yeah, it should be fun, I think. And I agree with you. The Looney Tunes should not. They should not
shuffle off this mortal coil.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a little harder for that to happen, because I think more people, Looney Tunes have been around a lot longer, so I think they've survived multiple generations more than the Muppets. I mean, I would feel bad about the Muppets too, but I got to be honest with you, I'm not as attached to the Muppets as I would be to Looney Tunes or like Tom and Jerry. Like Tom and Jerry is probably a good example, because Tom and Jerry still survives. People still like Tom and Jerry. People who are friggin' like 18 to 25, a lot of people still know Tom and Jerry and like Tom and Jerry. So the reality is things like that, and that's where streaming actually helps too, because a lot of that stuff is available either on Tubi, or even if it's no longer on HBO Max, like a lot of the Looney Tunes stuff was, a lot of that stuff is available on Tubi. And like Tom and Jerry, the shorts that they used to, the TV show stuff they used to do, the stuff they used to always play in the theaters, the theatrical shorts. It is part of the culture that it's good to keep it going. And this is something that, and Looney Tunes is like that. And yeah, I think it's something that if there's like one project to like throw our support to try to rally people to go see it, you know, I think this is something that's probably will be fun to go see no matter what. So given the opportunity, if you can see it in the theater, probably this might be a cool one to support.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm literally excited for it. You know, depending on like future trailers, obviously, this might even be something I can take my nephew to go see. I think, you know, River and Sam and the new baby Lucy are probably a little too young. But I think depending on the contents of this, this might be fun for my older nephew Dean to see. He'll be 6 when this comes out. So here's hoping. It just looks fun.
Excited. Yeah, it does. I think that describes it really well. I think it does look fun, and that's stuff that we don't have enough of. So I think that's some, like I said, it's a project that's worth rallying around, as long as it has any interest at all. And I think it will be kid friendly. I think obviously there's probably going to be some adult humor, which you might get a little hint of even in the trailer, but the reality is it's probably going to be done in that subtle way where it might go over your
like
head
Shrek.
If you're a kid. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Good. Yeah. I was just going to say like Shrek.
Well, Shrek's the gold standard in that sort of humor. I think people usually use it as the benchmark anyways.
Yeah, Shrek. Yeah, there's a lot of adult humor in Shrek, but it's done in such a subtle way that it's really easy for it not to be zeroed in on, and enough to make kids even start questioning about what was that about. And it's going down the road you do not want to go down with, given the choice as a parent, but you can avoid that because it's, yeah, that's just boom right over their heads. But I understand what that meant. But yeah,
for sure. What's next? Are we all tapped out?
I think, unless you have something, I think that's actually it. One thing I will add is, right as I contradict myself ever so briefly, as we roll into the close, I don't think I told you that I ordered one of those St. Walker statues to paint.
Nice. Yeah. You're paying the guy to do it?
No, I'm doing this one.
Okay.
This one I'm going to, I'll show you which one that I actually got this time. I ordered a bunch of paints. The paints are going to arrive before the statue does, which is good because now I can do my tests. I can do my tests and try to come up to which blue I want and which way to approach it. Do I need to mix these colors together? Do I need to put a metallic base over the white primer and then put the blue that I like over it? Will that give it enough of a sheen? I bought some gloss varnish too. So if I need it to pop more, I can test that to see, does that make it pop? You know, is it too glossy like this? Just only on the blue parts, does it make it work? So yeah, I think, and you've, and you, I know you've seen this, I know you've seen the statue before, but I think that this one, I think I'm much more confident that I can handle this one and do a pretty good job with this more than that parallax one. I mean, I probably could have done a halfway decent job with the parallax one, but I have no regrets at all about getting that one painted when I got it, besides having it painted and then sent to me. Yeah, because I love St. Walker, but I have more investment historically, obviously, with Parallax. So that's kind of was important as a borderline centerpiece of my collection to have that looking as sharp as possible. Yeah. So, so the email address is lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
No new Green Lantern issue next week, guys. However, since it's not titled Green Lantern, but it may escape your notice. Next week, Justice League Intergalactic Special Number 1 comes out. That's the team led by Carol. So if anybody was looking forward to that, that is next week. So if you listen to this on the day it drops tomorrow, check your local comic shop tomorrow for Justice League Intergalactic Special. If you're aiming to get all the main Lantern stuff.
Cool.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.